You're listening to Current State on WKAR, your weekly radio magazine of newsmakers and stories from all around the Capital Region and across the state. I'm your host, Katie Cook, sitting in for Reginald Hardwick. For this week's show, we're looking at how a community can heal. It's been about a month since those long, difficult weeks of Larry Nassar's sentencing in Ingham and Eaton counties, when we heard more than 250 survivors speak publicly about their abuse. Now, the questions in many people's minds are, how do we move forward? How do we make sure every person who suffers abuse can be believed and get the support they need? So we've highlighted a group of organizations who are ready to help. In fact, they have been doing the important work of helping victims for years. We're calling this series WKAR Connects because we want to connect you and the ones you care about to resources that can help you. The first organization we look at is End Violent Encounters, also known as EVE. I spoke with Executive Director Erin Roberts, and I first asked her to just give us an overview of what services EVE offers.
We have a shelter for domestic violence victims. We have counseling services for domestic and sexual violence, stalking, dating violence. And all the counseling services are at no cost to the survivor. We have advocacy services that will help when somebody's restarting in their lives or they need to go to court and testify. We're there. We sit with them while they wait. We sit with them afterwards. We prep them for what to expect. Our advocates also will work with people on housing, employment, anything that may be needed in order to get wherever the survivor is identified that they want to go.
EVE started in 1977 under a different name, at a time when there was nowhere for domestic violence victims to turn, and the number of domestic violence situations law enforcement were responding to wasn't even being recorded. Now it helps women in Ingham and Eaton counties. Here's Erin Roberts again.
One of the things that people tend to not know about us is that you don't ever have to go into shelter to receive our services. You don't need a police report. You don't need to have a sexual assault nurse examination. You don't need to have anything other than calling and telling us that you need support.
You know, our community, as you know, right now is in a time of turmoil. The MSU community kind of expands to East Lansing and Lansing in the wake of the Larry Nassar case. What do you think we need as a community right now to be able to move forward from this?
I think some of the most important pieces are the ones where we're opening up to having the discussions about this, about what are we doing as schools, what are we doing as law enforcement, what are we doing as churches, community centers, wherever people go, doctor's offices, all of these different types of entities are now beginning to look and introspect. What do we know about this? What do we know about how to report? What do we know about how to support somebody when they do come forward? All those questions that they've been there. These situations are not just Larry Nassar. They are so far beyond, and they exist in every walk of life. And so what we're doing now is we're having the conversations. We need to have those conversations. We need to hear what the survivors want, need, and have identified weren't available. And then we need to formulate plans as a community to come together to execute those.
After the Nassar sentencing hearings, both in Ingham County and in Eaton County, there was a group of folks who I understand were encouraged by you guys at EVE and also the Firecracker Foundation to stand outside the courtrooms and to hold posters and signs of support for the Nassar survivors. Why did you feel that survivors needed to see that?
It was driven from that understanding of how brave it is to stand in a public venue like they were and address your perpetrator and be open about your very intimate details of your sexual assault. And the best thing we can do is say, we hear you and we believe you and we support you. And as they walked out and you could see what, to some of them, what it meant to see people gathered out in the cold, standing there just to honor their bravery, it was obvious that it was a good choice to go and do that.
That was my conversation with Eve's executive director, Aaron Roberts. The next organization we look at is the Firecracker Foundation. I spoke with founder and executive director, Tajmika Torok. And she started by explaining the services that Firecracker Foundation offers.
The Firecracker Foundation provides mental health therapy, trauma-sensitive yoga, and pediatric medical advocacy services for children under the age of 18 who have had any experience with sexual trauma. And so that can be anything like sexual harassment, exploitation, child pornography, and sexual assault. And we serve their families as well. So anyone who is a parent or guardian of a child who experienced sexual trauma in the Tri-County area, our services are free, and anyone can access them just by calling us and we'll get them in.
Torok's decision to start the Firecracker Foundation in 2013 was deeply personal.
I am a survivor of child sexual abuse, and when I turned 30, I went into therapy, and it was the first time I had a therapist or anyone open a book and show me, number one, the definition of sexual trauma. And it was a chart, and it said, like, severe, less severe, and almost everything on there had happened to me. And then the other chart was consequences, so PTSD, insomnia, addictions, eating disorders, all of these things. And it blew my mind. I just didn't have that information. And I started to have questions about the kids that were struggling and how we were serving them. So I started to envision an organization that would give kids what I didn't have.
I asked her how it felt to watch the Nassar scandal unfold. As someone who not only serves survivors in this community, but who is a survivor herself.
As a survivor, it's always draining and exhausting to know that there are other survivors that were not heard, were not listened to, and were not kept safe. And that continues to be a problem in our global community, really. It's also devastating to know that an institution made children more vulnerable for 20 years. The community that I live in and the community where I serve children. It's also difficult to watch the narrative of shock and surprise as if Michigan State University and as if USA Gymnastics hasn't already had these issues. Specifically MSU, we know that there, 250 survivors, they have known that they have an issue with campus sexual assault for decades. And so specifically to watch the shock and dismay has been really frustrating.
Torok becomes a little emotional when she reflects on the work she does and the need for it.
When I think about what it means when we are inundated with the stories of survivors who weren't listened to, that we have families who have a space where first we believe them and where we listen to what they need and try to provide that, I think is something that's remarkable in our community and feels to me very much like a kind of, this is cheesy. It feels to me like a lighthouse right now in this world where we're exhausted and inundated and frustrated and, you know, we're watching survivors having to tell their trauma narratives on a national level and watching people victim blame not only the children but the parents. And so I'm hoping, my daily hope is that when families come into our space that they can put down those stresses and that they know that when they walk in our doors that they'll never have to negotiate whether someone in the room believes them.
That was my conversation with Tajmika Torok, the executive director and founder of the Firecracker Foundation. According to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, as many as 1 out of 4 girls and 1 out of 6 boys will experience some form of sexual abuse before the age of 18. With a combination of effective counseling and support from parents or caregivers, children can and do recover from these experiences. For our next WKAR Connects, we look at Small Talk, a local organization that's been working to provide child victims of sexual and domestic abuse with the support they need to heal since 2011. Here's Executive Director Alex Brace explaining the services that Small Talk offers.
So Small Talk is a children's advocacy center. We provide counseling services, forensic interviews, and prevention program, canine advocacy program. And that's all with the goal of helping children heal from the trauma of sexual and physical abuse.
Small Talk services are for children ages 3 to 18 and are provided at no cost to the families they serve. When abuse is reported, law enforcement refers children to Small Talk.
We have agreements with all the law enforcement agencies in the county, the prosecutor's office, Children's Protective Services, medical professionals at Sparrow, and our staff. So we use a multidisciplinary team approach to help these kids through the investigative process and beyond.
Brace says they arrange for the child to be interviewed by one person, one time. CPS, the prosecutor's office, and law enforcement are invited to observe the interview or have access to the recording of it as needed.
Before places like ours existed, children wouldn't get interviewed in a child-friendly environment. It might be at a police station or some other place, and with the sensitivity of the subject matter that we're dealing with, it's really important to have a child-friendly environment for a child to come to and feel comfortable in. So that's part of what we try to provide. And then we do this interview one time. We invite all these professionals to the interview at the same time, and that's to avoid re-traumatizing the child and asking them questions over and over again. Because before places like ours existed, children would get interviewed, you know, maybe four or five times before they even get to the court process.
Brace shares about one special girl who they were able to watch grow through the counseling process at Small Talk.
One of the most memorable sort of cases that I can think of is there's a quote on our website that says, I'm brave, I'm strong, I can do anything. And it was a child who had been through the process with us, who'd been here for a forensic interview, who'd, you know, pushed through and was able to heal from the trauma that she had experienced. And it always kind of sat with me because when we talked about, you know, what's a mantra, what's something that you can use to kind of help you through this really difficult time, and, you know, for her to bring that up, that's sort of been our goal as an organization, is we want every child to leave these doors when they're finished with their counseling or when they're finished with their treatment, to be able to say that I'm brave, I'm strong, I can do anything despite the trauma that they've experienced.
It's the thought of all the other children out there who are suffering and who need Small Talk's help that keeps Brace going.
Sexual abuse is a crime of secrecy. And I think, you know, the way that things have been going lately, it's something that we need to pay more attention to, clearly. We need to make sure that people are heard and that they're believed. And I think that's the thing that kind of keeps me motivated and keeps me going, is knowing that there are kids out there who are experiencing this as we speak. And I want every child to have the opportunity to heal, just like the hundreds of kids who've been through here have been able to heal and grow. And we've been able to see the success and the hope that we've been able to facilitate here. And I want to make sure to provide that to every child in our county.
That was Alex Brace, Executive Director of Small Talk. Nearly 3 in 10 women and 1 in 10 men in the U.S. have experienced rape, physical violence, and/or stalking by a partner. Cindy Allwood, executive director at the Women's Center of Greater Lansing, says that often women don't leave these abusive relationships because they don't have the means to support themselves. And that's why career counseling is such a big part of what the center does. I spoke with Allwood about that and the many other services the Women's Center offers for our last installment of WKAR Connects. Allwood starts by describing their mission.
Our mission is to help women realize their potential. So the services that we offer are designed to help eliminate the barriers that women face to reaching their potential. So there's support groups, there's counseling, there's job assistance, there's workshops, all kinds of different things that we do.
They even have a clothing closet full of professional clothes, shoes, and accessories where women who need clothes for work can come shop for a couple free outfits. Allwood says their focus is on being a homey, welcoming environment.
We offer for anyone a safe space, a place to go when there may not be anywhere else to go. And you'll have someone here to listen. You'll have someone who's non-judgmental. You'll be believed, we'll trust you, and we'll listen to whatever it is that you need to tell us. And on top of that, we have really good coffee and really good chocolate. So, I mean, it's a very serious topic, I don't mean to make light of it at all with that, but it's amazing to me, and the cats. You know, that's that whole experience where you come in and you're traumatized and terrified and don't know what to do, and the first thing we do is take care of those basic needs. Mm-hmm. Please come sit. Would you like something warm to drink? If the cat feels like you need him, he will come and sit with you. And so we try to break down those barriers that a lot of women already put on themselves to talking about this by just our environment.
It's comfort.
It's comfort, exactly.
Is that something you've seen in your experience, women who have not been believed?
Yes. Yes. It's one of the worst things that you can do to a person is deny, A, their existence, and their truth and what happened to them. Especially if you're in a position to do something about it, or you're a position of authority, or you're in a position for a child. As an adult, your role is to take care of them. Your role is to nurture and listen and protect them.
Allwood turns to the recent example of the 250-plus survivors of Larry Nassar.
These girls didn't have that for a lot of the time, because of all the things that go on with grooming, with people who do this sort of heinous stuff to people. There's lots of ways that the parents become victims as well as their children. But I think there needs to be a community healing for our entire community, because those girls went through an incredible situation, and the community hearing about it, and the MSU community, as well as the Lansing, East Lansing community, we're all suffering right now. We're all suffering.
Is there anything that you think the community maybe doesn't know about you or misunderstands about your organization?
One of the misconceptions that we constantly struggle against is that we only serve women who are in lower socioeconomic level, and we serve everyone.
Well, that is a really good point to bring up, because I think there might be women who find out about you or hear an interview with you and think, mm-hmm. well, I'm not, you know, I have a job. Mm-hmm. I don't want to take any resources away right. from someone who doesn't. So what would you say to those women?
I would say, live your best life. Everyone deserves the opportunity to achieve their potential. We're here for you. Come on in. And we serve everyone. We serve men. We serve boys. There are other organizations that are better positioned to do that, but we offer couples and marriage and family therapy, and we do have a lot of families that we serve right now. So it's not just a women's center, it's a community center. We also don't take insurance, so you don't pay for services if you can't afford to. We have a sliding fee scale that starts at $1, and we never turn anyone away based on inability to pay, never.
Allwood recounts the story of one woman the Women's Center was able to help in a number of ways.
We have a client, she's wonderful, and she moved here from another place fleeing a very serious domestic violence relationship, serious. She had a girl, little girl at the time, who I think was 3 or 4, just an amazing little kid, resilient as ever. And mom, they had nothing. They had what was in their car. They came to Lansing. Someone told them to come here. We have helped her through countless jobs while she was getting back on her feet. She finally finished her nursing degree through Lansing Community College and graduated with honors. And she came back in a few weeks ago, and they just bought their first house. She was over the moon. Over the moon.
That was Cindy Allwood, the executive director of the Women's Center of Greater Lansing. To find out more about the services they offer, visit WKAR.org and click on the blue WKAR Connects box on the right side of the page. Coming up later in the hour, we'll find out how two MSU students used the color teal in a creative way to show support for survivors of sexual assault. That and more after the break. Welcome back to Current State on WKAR. I'm your host, Katie Cook. One way people have been showing support for victims of sexual assault in the wake of the Larry Nassar scandal is by wearing the color teal. You could even say that teal has become the new green and white at MSU, because two MSU students created something to show support for survivors in a very public, very teal way. WKAR's Brooke Allen talked to them.
I am speaking to Sierra Nicole Richards and also Anna Warble. Both are juniors, and you are the co-creators of a Facebook frame that is teal. So Sierra, tell me a little bit about that, and then Anna, I'll have you jump in.
So this is all about basically our own campaign to help show that Spartans are supporting survivors. We're trying to get it out there that we have their back, and Anna was the one that actually had the original design, because for the Comart Sci logo, it's like that square with the Spartan. By creating this Facebook frame, we're kind of like making it public that we have your back, we support you, we're out there. So Anna did the original design, so can you talk about that?
We wanted to create this frame so that people within the college and students could show their support, and obviously still keeping the Spartan head there, showing we're still here, but we hear you, and we want to acknowledge what's been going on. And we used the box of the updated Comart Sci logo, and then we flipped the helmet on the bottom and also made the logo teal.
Teal is the actual color to support sexual assault awareness.
Yeah.
So that's the color that we're seeing around campus at a lot of sporting events in mm-hmm. the student sections. A lot of t-shirts, you'll see everyone wearing teal, correct?
Yeah.
Tell me, as students, how you're both feeling with everything going on campus.
I think there's more support now. I think it was a very big event and definitely shook the campus, but I think it's also brought us closer together. I think there's a lot more community, there's a lot more support, and like people are realizing there is all these groups to support you. There is all these like there's the inclusion committee, there's like a bunch going on to help us heal as a college, I feel.
Mm-hmm. And as a female, how do you feel?
It's obviously very tragic to see all of this going on, but at the same time, it's nice that people are finally paying attention to this issue that's been going on for years and years, and that people are finally concerned about it and wanting to do something about it. So hopefully with all this attention on the issues that have been going on, we'll be able to stop them from happening in the future.
So going back to this Facebook frame that you both co-created, how did that make you feel to create this and to see it? Did you guys just start talking about it and say, hey, let's do this? Or tell me how it came to be.
It was actually in the office the few days before. We were kind of talking about like what the dean's response to everything would be and like what our response as a college is, like what's our responsibility. And I believe it was Nicole, our boss, who showed us the ad frames, and it was kind of like her idea, like, oh, this would be really cool. It's a way to show that, like, you personally support the cause.
Sierra, so how does it make you feel to have been kind of a part of this? I mean, it's a big deal.
I thought it was really cool because it's a way to get the word out there about the support while also, like, reaching so many people. We ended up reaching about the post itself, reached about 50,000 people. So that's crazy. Over like 500 people used the frame. So the fact that it went as viral as it did and it got picked up by MSU, they reposted it. I think that just shows the success in the community that we all want to show our support.
So your number one priority right now as students and having created this Facebook frame, Sierra?
I thought like the biggest priority was making it shareable just so it could reach so many people and so many people could be like affected by it. So in fact, it was a Facebook frame. A lot of people, you can put it for temporary for like a week. And I think that was really cool, just reaching as many people as we could.
And how about you, Anna?
Just getting general awareness out there and having people be informed about what's going on.
Now I know the faces behind the Facebook frames. So thank you so much.
Awesome. Thank you.
That was Brooke Allen speaking with Sierra Nicole Richards and Anna Warble, co-creators of the Teal Facebook Frame. As you might know, Mondays on WKAR's Morning Edition, we have Mondays with the Mayor. And last week, Brooke Allen interviewed East Lansing Mayor Mark Meadows.
Good morning, Mr. Meadows.
Good morning.
Nice to have you here, and a pleasure to finally meet you, actually.
Well, I'm glad to be here, and nice to meet you.
Thank you. So we are going to start off. First of all, I ask every mayor the same question. Did you always want to be mayor of East Lansing?
No, I didn't always want to be mayor of East Lansing, but after I had been elected to city council back in the 90s, I wanted to be mayor of East Lansing. There's not a lot of power that the mayor has, but they do get to set the agenda, and I enjoy that.
So how long have you been the mayor?
This would be my 11th year. So I've been mayor for a long time in two segments because I went to the legislature in between.
So you've seen a lot of changes and a lot of people come and go.
Yes, I have seen a lot of changes. I think most of them have been positive changes for the community. But, you know, not always, you know, and sometimes we've approved projects that had one expectation, but, you know, the world changes and you can't be clairvoyant. So they haven't always worked out the way that we had hoped to.
Okay, so we will, we have another segment coming up with you, which will be longer, and we'll get into the city business and everything going on. But East Lansing, MSU falls within that category, I assume.
Yes.
Richard Spencer will be on campus today. What do you think of that?
Well, you know, I think that the First Amendment allows even a Richard Spencer to spew the things that he spews. I'm hoping that most of the public anyway will attend an event that is being hosted at All Saints Church on Abbott Road, right across from the Hanna Community Center, which is a sort of a counter activity to celebrate our diversity in the community rather than to criticize it, which is what I see Richard Spencer as promoting. So I'm hoping that there won't be any trouble at it. I think that having it in the Ag Pavilion is, you know, an appropriate location. If you're going to have them on campus, why not put them out there? So that's how I see it.
I was looking at the website yesterday, and I noticed that the city of East Lansing has recently introduced the e-dialogue. So tell me a little bit about that.
Well, the e-dialogue in this particular instance is designed to give people an opportunity to give us their opinion on potential revenue sources that the city should be looking at, which is really what they should be looking at, because the city isn't going to impose any tax increases or revenue increases on our citizens. They have to vote on it. So we are trying to determine whether we should put something on the ballot. And the e-dialogue at this point in time had a survey in it that sought to get the public's response to about five different potential revenue increases that could be put on the ballot. That's as a result of a similar survey that over 800 people participated in that had just closed, that told us these are the things we want you to cut out of the budget. So we're moving forward on those. And we'll
so give me an example of what some of those things were.
Oh, well, things as simple as not plowing sidewalks anymore. You know, the things like should we actually subsidize the festivals that we have within the community, or should we close the Hanna Community Center, or should we have an aquatic center? Should we just close the aquatic center? So all of those things are on the chopping block. And we have to adopt a budget by the third week of May. And there's already been a proposal from the city manager to do a number of these cuts in this budget, and then some more significant cuts that we can't do this year, or it doesn't make sense to do this year, that would add, I think we'd get to about $4.2 million in cuts over the next 2 years, that money we need to reduce our unfunded liability regarding our pensions and the pension system in East Lansing. So these are significant issues, significant problems, and we're trying to engage the public as much as we possibly can in helping us make the decisions on this.
So is that normal for a city to ask for the public input so much? I mean, this is the second survey that just closed last night, by the way.
Well, I think there's, there are probably people in the community who don't think that we ask enough. Mm-hmm. But I think that East Lansing history has been with public participation. You know, you go to some communities and you have your regular at the microphone to talk about the city. You know, we get people with who are professors, this is the third most educated community in the entire nation. So, yeah, we want public participation. There's a lot of great ideas out there, and we don't have all the ideas. So the history of East Lansing is to encourage public participation in the decision-making process.
So speaking of the history of East Lansing, the city recently formally apologized for its past discriminatory housing practices, and this just recently happened.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So tell me a little bit about that.
Well, you know, there was a young man in the community who wrote an essay about why he sat. He's a basketball player for East Lansing High School, and he's 15 years old. He would sit, not kneel, but sit during the national anthem, and then he wrote an essay about why. And he talked a lot about the history of the city of East Lansing and probably the history of an awful lot of communities across this country. Which had deed restrictions which prohibited African Americans from purchasing houses in them, or had policies that supported that in a city government, and East Lansing has done both. So it was time to apologize for that. I mean, we're proud of the fact that, 4 days after the assassination of Martin Luther King, we enacted the first community open housing law in the country. And in 1972, we established the first comprehensive civil rights ordinance in the nation that has been a something that other communities have copied over and over again. Those are good things, but we also have a history, and it was time for us to talk about that. We're establishing, probably before June this year, with the university and with the school district, a community conversation about racism in the community, about the history, the present, and what we should do in the future to fight racism in the community. And, this is a community that has over 130 different nationalities living in it. We celebrate our diversity, but we don't always have things we can be proud of. And so that's what that was all about. His name is Alex Hosey, mm-hmm. and it was a great thing for him to write.
So you are celebrating, or we'll be talking about diversity on a annual level?
On an annual basis, that's
okay.
Right. Yeah.
All right.
We instructed the Human Relations Commission to establish first this first effort, but then in following years to have this same type of event during Black History Month.
Okay. And then, so we recently had, East Lansing's been pretty much in the national spotlight. And so let's talk about the Larry Nassar scandal, if you will. And you were pretty right there. I mean, you had called on the Board of Trustees to step down. And
yeah, I still feel that very strongly that they should be leaving. I'll tell you why. I think, well, first of all, there's been a failure of leadership with regard to this issue. You know, in this day and age, just the whole idea that these complaints would come in and be disregarded, that this man would be able to continue this year after year after year, is just, hard to believe. And that the university was complicit in this is, I think, a tragedy. That means the buck has to stop with leadership, and the buck the buck stops with the Board of Trustees, and they should step down. Otherwise, every time there's a trustee election, which is every 2 years, this whole thing is going to be dredged up for the university again. If they want to do the right thing for the university, they should step down.
So we only have about 30 seconds, but do you think that the university has kind of marred the reputation of East Lansing. Are they one and the same, or are they separate?
They are. Well, we are, you know, we're joined at the hip, and but we are two different organizations. So no, I don't think it's identified with so much with the city of East Lansing as it is with the university.
That was East Lansing's Mayor Mark Meadows speaking with Morning Edition host Brooke Allen. Coming up next, a concert and an album release from a group of MSU graduates, and music and conversation with the comedic singer-songwriter Wally Pleasant, coming up after the break. Welcome back to Current State. I'm Katie Cook. Last August, some MSU graduates assembled for a concert focusing on women-centric music and poetry. The group calls themselves Mirabai, and this week, in conjunction with International Women's Day, their album Ecstatic Songs is released. WKAR's Jamie Paisley spoke with their director, Dr. Sandra Snow, about the project.
So the idea actually was born when I heard former President Simon at a State of the University address. And one of the things that she pointed out was that our relationship with our alumni should be more than just seeking donations to support the university, but actually to capitalize on the intellectual capital that they bring to the table. So I thought this would be a fantastic way to accomplish that particular goal, and then also to deal with this long-standing need to equalize the work of women in the field of choral music.
And then the repertoire. Tell me about that process of the chemistry.
That's the heart of the whole project. So all of it is shaped around the three movements of a work called Ecstatic Songs by David Brunner. And the music features the poetry of Mirabai, who happens to be the namesake of the ensemble.
And 16th century poetess. Yeah.
Right. And also a woman who really struggled in her family and community because how she wanted to live her life was not the way the family had intended it. So she'd overcome a lot of struggle.
Don't see him again.
Exactly. No, don't ever see him again. And so we decided that that would be the namesake for the ensemble, just referencing the tenacity that women can have, the ability to power through and persevere. And then the music around that just evolved as I thought about how we want to showcase either the music by women composers or texts that reflect women's experiences. Don't ever see him
again. Don't ever see me. We're speaking with Dr. Sandra Snow, director of the ensemble Mirabai, women singers and all MSU graduates. And would you apply the term social justice choir to Mirabai? It's a term that I only really just became aware of not that long ago through one of the composers that you're playing at, Abby Bettinas.
Abby Bettinas has a lot of social justice kinds of composition and also projects. I would not so narrowly define it as a social justice choir in that that can have a very particular connotation as being an issue-based initiative. And I think this is a bit broader than that. Having said that, I think all of those kinds of issues are completely relevant to women's experiences. And so, yes, some of this repertoire, there'll be intersectionality, you know, as a result of that.
You talked about how the origins of this came from former president of MSU, Simon, and her initiative about bringing alumni to do more than just financial contributions. But in the wake of all the events that have happened involving MSU and the Nassar trial and all of that exploration, does that change the overall goals of Mirabai as an ensemble as you move forward?
My view is if we can come out of this established as sort of leaders in how we're going to go forward. In other words, it's not enough just to make the situation better and our policies better, but but we have to actually be the ones to say, this is what it looks like when a university gets it right. And yes, I think this ensemble can be a part of what that looks like. We've initiated Mirabai Young Women's Scholars Program. We're going to bring 8 high school and early college women to MSU campus this summer. We're going to pair them with a Mirabai mentor member, and they're going to have the opportunity to interact and study choral music for a full week with these members.
Longer term goals with this project as well, going forward?
Well, we hope that this is just the beginning of the kind of project work that we would be involved with. So recording, coming together, once perhaps a year for public performances, and also commissioning new works that relate to the mission of the ensemble would be important for us.
We've been speaking with Dr. Sandra Snow of the ensemble Mirabai, whose album, Ecstatic Songs, is released today, International Women's Day, via their website, as well as through streaming services like Spotify and iTunes. For WKAR, I'm Jamie Paisley.
Wally Pleasant is a comedic singer-songwriter who will perform twice this weekend in Charlotte. Scott Pohl brought the longtime local favorite into WKAR's Studio S for a little conversation and music.
Wally Pleasant, welcome to Current State.
Thank you, Scott. Great to be here.
It's good to see you. You know, we were just talking about the first time we met or the first time I interviewed you, and we don't exactly, between the two of us, remember whether it was at the time your first album, Songs About Stuff, came out, or maybe it was the second album, and we talked about the first album some. But I remember one thing I said to you, lo those many years ago, and to me it's still apropos. Uh-huh. And I compared you to Bob Dylan, believe it or not. Maybe
Goodness.
You don't recall this. Not just because you're a guy who plays guitar and sings, but because when you need to, you'll cram more syllables into the number of beats that are available to make it work.
Wow. Well, I'm a huge Bob Dylan fan, that's for sure.
Yeah, but Bob Dylan doesn't have your sense of humor, Wally.
Yeah, poor guy.
He has other attributes.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, now listen, you're doing a couple of shows this weekend at the Windwalker Gallery in Charlotte. Tell us a little bit about that as a venue. Why did you want to play there?
It's very convenient. I happen to live there, and it's a wonderful space. They have an art gallery, and they have a stage, which is really, really great for acoustic musicians. It's even got a little balcony or mezzanine or whatever you call it. And it's kind of got a hippie kind of vibe going. Yeah. The gentleman bought the building, his name is Richard, and he bought it about 30 years ago, and he just started working on it, and little by little, he's gotten it, so it's just a tremendous venue for art and performance. The community's really supported it a lot, too.
How many albums have you put out now?
I've put out 6. I have enough songs for probably 2 more. I'm going to start working on one in the spring. It's kind of like things have changed. I was going to maybe do just a digital release and possibly vinyl and not do CDs.
We're moving that way.
Yeah, and I've got all the demos recorded, but I mean, really, when I listen to my version of the demos, those are really what I did for my first few albums anyway. It was mostly just acoustic guitar and singing, but I wanted to do just kind of more instruments, kind of like a country influence thing is for the next one. And we're going to do that, hopefully release it later this year.
What are you going to play for us today?
Today I've got a song called Denny's at 4 a.m. It's an older one, and let me give it a shot here.
Here's that sense of humor we were talking about, folks. Denny's at 4 a.m., Wally Pleasant.
Just got out of the bar about a little while ago. I was looking for a place to eat, but my mind was working kind of slow. So I drove around till I found my destination about 3:25. I was too tired to sleep and too drunk to drive. And now I'm at Denny's at 4 a.m. Writing these words on a napkin. And I'm not even sure what town I'm in. Denny's at 4 a.m. That Grand Slam breakfast is making me kinda sick. I've noticed that a lot of Denny's managers look like Weird Al Yankovic. And the one who's walking toward my table is no exception. He's looking mad cause the friends I'm with are smoking in the non-smoking section at Denny's at 4 a.m. Writing these words on a napkin. And I'm still not sure what town I'm in. Denny's at 4 a.m. I've got nowhere else to go and nothing else to do except stare at this bright yellow menu. I wish I hadn't ordered that dang Nam Grand Slam. Denny's at 4 a.m. Nighttime is slowly turning into day, and I'm running out of things to say. So maybe this song won't win a Grammy. Pretty good chance of that. So maybe I should have ordered Moons Over My Hammy at Denny's at 4 a.m. Denny's at 4 a.m. Actually, now it's more like a 4:45. And that morning paper has just arrived. So I better be getting back to my motel. One with a sign outside that's got a burned out L. So I guess it makes it more like a moat. And the next time you're at Denny's, I want you to sing this song from note to note. Denny's at 4 a.m. Denny's at 4 a.m.
Denny's at 4 a.m., Wally Pleasant. Have the people at Denny's ever heard this song, to your knowledge?
Whoa, I don't know. That's a good question. I was written at an IHOP in Texas long ago, ironically
See,
enough. Yeah.
Wrote it at an IHOP.
I know, isn't
Denny's.
That strange? Life is complicated.
Tell me about what you've been writing lately, even generally.
I've still have the trying to be funny focus, but I've kind of more geared toward rootsy kind of country kind of stuff, and got one that I just wrote last week, which I was listening to Jimmy Rogers. He was a 1920s and 1930s guy. He was nicknamed the Mississippi Blue Yodeler, and so I was listening to that the same day that I lost my phone. So anybody that loses their phone and listens to that music could write that song, pretty much, I think.
Well, I think what we'll do is record that after we wrap up and post it as a bonus track on the website, okay?
Okay.
What's it called?
It's called I Lost My Phone.
I should have guessed. Well, Wally Pleasant has a couple of shows this weekend at the Windwalker Gallery in Charlotte. Go to the Windwalker Facebook page for more information about those shows. Wally Pleasant, thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Scott. Thanks for having me.
For Current State, I'm Scott Pohl.
And that's our show for today. We make Current State here at the College of Communications, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University. Today's show was produced by me, Katie Cook, and Karel Vega. WKAR's Director of Broadcasting is Susie Elkins. Our Executive Producer is Peter Worf. Thanks also to Brooke Allen, Kevin Lavery, Jamie Paisley, Scott Pohl, and our news director, Reginald Hardwick. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next week. You've been listening to Current State on WKAR.